You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.
How's it going, Los Angeles? This is The Startup with Monique Leray. I'm Monique Leray. I'm back. This is the fifth year show, the fifth year anniversary. I couldn't do a party. I couldn't get into the studio today. I just have too much on my plate. Instead, you're in bed with me. I'm keeping it roots. I'm keeping it here where it all started. 5 years in reflection on this show is really massive for me. I'm so grateful that I trusted my gut, and the thing that wasn't easy to do, I did it. The show will get sharper. We'll start marking. I just wanted to know if I could keep consistent, and I can't. I look up and it's September 8th of 2024, and we started this little bitty show in September of 2019, and I didn't know the wild ride we'd do. We'd take this show all over the world. Sam, your team, everybody there that supported me, it got rough at moments, but Sam, thank you. Sam, can you chime in and say hi? Sam's going to be the Wizard of Oz behind the scenes here.
Hi, Monique. Congratulations.
Thank you, Sam.
You're a great woman and a tough woman, and we love having you. You've been very consistent, and we love having you at the station. Definitely.
Oh, Sam, thank you so much. Sam's not a fan of the remote, darling. You've got to get Sam in the live studio. So, Sam, it's Emmy's week this week, next week. So I will be joining you in studio as promised. Just couldn't get there today. Thank you for believing in me and the kind things that you said.
Sure. Sounds good. Have a great show, Monique. And here's for another five more years.
Thanks, dear. Here's another five, Sam. All right, guys, I have a very special guest. He's a very busy person. He was on our new podcast, The Un-United State. You're going to get me a little unfiltered there. I'm a little more professional here, but I'm bringing someone I just admire, adore. He is in a book. He's been in his industry for over 30 years. He's very accomplished and speaking soon for the national, I believe it's the National Association of Realtors in Miami. He's a keynote speaker coming up the 16th through the 19th of this month. Please welcome Mr. Jay Heckendorf to Linda. Jay, welcome to The Startup, my five-year show.
Woo, 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 woo. Yeah. Boom. There we go.
The confetti pump it when up. We need it.
We got to pump it up.
Thank you for being here. So why don't we go full screen? Jay, what I would love as my five-year anniversary gift to my listeners and viewers, we want to grow, right? We're called The Startup, but soon we might be called The Startup Equals The Scale. We don't know, but you are a professional in your industry, mortgage and real estate, and you have done this 30 years seamlessly. And so I really want you to start off from the beginning. You have the whole 25 minutes left of the show. I want you to share where you were born, where you grew up. Please don't leave anything on the table, and you can share how you got to where you are now. Sam, can we go full screen on Jay?
Well, all right. This this is going to make you cry, and it's also going to motivate and propel you. So I was born in Waco, Texas, and when I was about 6 months old, my father, he was a bank robber, a drug addict and a bank robber, and needless to say, they parted ways. And then my mother married some other guy, and so about 6 months, or maybe I was 2 years by then, went to Ohio. And back then, we didn't really have seatbelt laws and things like that. And so I literally rode in the back of a pickup truck from Texas to Ohio. And then, and that was an abusive, dysfunctional relationship. And so somehow we ended up back to Texas, over to Los Angeles. And then my mother dropped me off at my grandmother's house, my biological father, his mother's house. They're German. They're from Switzerland and Austria, and very, you know, regimented. And so she drops me off there, and then comes home on Sunday night to pick me up, and brings this guy and says, "Hey, Jay, here's your new dad." And I was like 5 years old by then, and I was like, "Oh, I got a new dad. Okay." A little bit awkward, and that was a pretty abusive scenario. So that stepfather, he too was a drug addict and physically and emotionally abusive. Like, if I rode my bike, you know, down the street, he'd throw newspapers in the spokes just to see me trip, and he wanted to do these spanking contests, you know, with like wooden spoons and, you know, the pizza board holders and things like that. And I wanted attention so bad that, or I needed it, that, you know, that I was like, okay, let's do it. What I didn't know is that he actually had a big wallet in his pants, whereas mine, obviously, as a little kid, I didn't have a wallet. And he whipped the crap out of me, and the job was to not cry. And you know, it just, I went to 14 elementary schools, and then two times our house was raided by SWAT teams. There's nothing like being a seven-year-old and getting woken up at 3:30 in the morning with helicopters shining their lights in and a bunch of guys with machine guns and armory jumping through my windows. You know, that's pretty scary, and not knowing what's going on. But my stepfather had dealt drugs to Hell's Angels and some other motorcycle groups, and they'd have these crazy parties. And I remember one time, you know, as a little kid, and we didn't really, we were dirt poor. Like, literally, breakfast was the big bags of like wheat, and you put in powdered milk, which powdered milk sucks because if you don't mix it up right, and then you get a clump of powdered milk down your throat, oh my God, it's so disgusting. And those wheat puffs were just like, you couldn't put enough sugar on that to make it taste good. So I chose to just sneak off a scoop or two of peanut butter in the morning. And I literally had to sneak it because peanut butter wasn't cheap in the late 70s, even though Jimmy Carter was president. So the, I don't know how that came on. Anyways, so one day there was this big pile of white on the coffee table. And I thought, oh my gosh, yeah, I get like the, you know, the powdered cream donuts or whatever, you know, like, you know, the donuts you get. And I didn't realize that was cocaine. So I dip in thinking, oh, this is going to be like the donuts you get. And no. And I forget if they took me to the doctor on that one or not. But needless to say, it was after that. Then, you know, again, I went to 14 schools because we kept getting evicted. Well, it's really tough when you go to the school in the inner city, because most of the inner city has always grown up in the same school or the same inner city. And we kind of jogged around the San Fernando Valley and Los Angeles. And so it's tough to, and this is, I'm not racist at all, okay? I'm just calling it for what it is. But as one of the few white kids, and it's not easy to make friends when you're jumping in to an inner city school and trying to make friends.
Yeah.
And
Sam brought me back. I have to cut right here because you have so much more meat in this sandwich. First of all, thank you for being transparent. You really have come a long way. I can relate to having to figure out the food situation. I think we had spam and cup of noodles and sardines.
Or those.
You remember spam?
Man, yeah, it's disgusting. Or gizzards. Remember gizzards?
You guys were getting fancy. Yeah. Pick it back up of where you're saying, of course, you know, you were one of the only Caucasian people in the neighborhood. Pick it up from there.
So the good part about that, okay, because I choose to look at things in a positive light. So the good part is after a lot of fights, we became friends, okay? And I learned, hey, you don't look somebody in the eye because they're going to take offense to it. And it did take, and I learned how, what it's like to be jumped by three or four people at the same time. And by then, my biological dad had gotten out of prison, and he taught me kind of how to fight and protect myself. Not to start a fight, but never walk away from a fight, right? The great part is that after a few fights, maybe a dozen, those people somehow became friends, because it was all about respect and loyalty. And the good part about going to 14 different elementary schools and three different junior highs is it didn't matter what the environment was, you learn how to connect. Now, the hard part back then, we didn't have cell phones, or the internet, that was not around. So trying to stay in touch with people that you already made friends with, but you got to move to another school, that was tough. And obviously I lost a bunch of them. It just lost touch, not lost them. But you learn how to make friends, and you learn the value of loyalty, respect, and just an acceptance and trust. And you learn how to be keenly aware of your surroundings. When you wake up in the morning, you don't know, did mom and dad get in a fight last night? What am I waking up to? What am I going to walk out of my bedroom? Am I getting the crap beat out of me because somebody's in a bad mood? Like, you just don't know. So you learned a really keen, I call it a talent, to observe behavior and really read body language and a room. And, you know, that's beneficial. Was it pleasant? Of course not.
No, let's pause there for a minute, if you don't mind, Jay, because you're really giving us a lot of great information. And I'm sorry that, you know, I have this feeling that highly successful, highly functional workaholics, I mean, you and I are both workaholics. So we own that, right? And find when I look at my own pathology, and my sociology and my work ethic, I'm looking at the pieces of the puzzle, and albeit different, it's quite similar, you and I. And I think maybe you could say this, but did you feel like the environment you were in, because it was so out of control, you had a choice? You had, like, you come to an apex where you're like, I can get control of my life, but I have to do these things. I mean, did you have that kind of come to Jesus, come to Buddha conversation with yourself?
It was kind of forced upon, of course. When I was 9 years old, if I wanted clothes, I had to buy my own clothes. I don't know how I was fortunate, but I really was fortunate. There was a guy, Steve Smith. Steve Smith had a landscaping company that they took care of a bunch of apartment buildings and Burger Kings and stuff like that. And he went to the same church. And Steve said, hey, Jay, if you are up at 3:30 in the morning and out on the alley, I'll pick you up, and you can pull weeds at these apartment buildings and Burger Kings and blah, blah, blah. But you better be in that alley by 3:30. Now, we lived in a seedy neighborhood, so I'd actually get up at 2:30 to make my lunch and be down in that alley by 3:30 in the morning. And I'd pluck weeds all day.
Wow.
And then I thought, well, screw that. At that point, we moved to another house, and it was a subdivision. And so I simply went to all the neighbors because the school had me selling calendars and candles and crap like that. And so I had to go door knocking, right? and my mom at the time was Jehovah's Witness, so I was familiar with door knocking. And so I thought, well, wait, why am I making money for all them? So I went to each of the neighbors, probably 200, maybe 300, and I said, hey, listen, can I mow your lawn? And I'll mow your front lawn for $8. And if you let me do your back lawn, I'll do it for 15. If you want edging, that's an extra $4. So I'll do it all for $19. And they said, yeah. And I'm kind of OCD, so I made sure it was good. But then I realized I'm allergic to pollen. So, you know, each of these neighbors were paying me $20 a cut. And thankfully, my mom at the time had opened a cleaning company, and she had a lady from Texas. The lady from Texas that was working for her had a son that was the same age as me, but about 2 feet taller than me, because I'm not actually the tallest guy. I'm vertically challenged. And so I look up to this guy, Tony. I said, hey, Tony, how much would you charge to mow lawn? You know, like the front lawn. And he says, I'll charge you $1. I said, how about if I give you $1.50? And if you do the back, I'll give you $3. And if you carry the lawnmower, because I bought a little trailer thing for, you know, like one of those tug trailers. And if you do that, I'll give you an extra 50 cents. So really, you can make $3 a lawn and I'll tip you out. And he says, oh, yeah, that's perfect. So he'd go mow those lawns so I didn't get my allergies. And I would go and collect the money once he was done. The snag of that business model was that then I found out Tony's mom was getting relocated back to Texas. She was getting back together with her husband. So Tony tells me one day, Jay, we're moving back to Texas. And I said, oh my gosh. What am I going to do? So I looked around a couple of the neighborhoods. I rode my bicycle and I went to one of the landscapers and I said, hey, I've got this route with like 30 homes and it makes about this much, but I'm not able to keep it up. Would you like to buy it? And so he gave me, I think, $1,200, and he bought my route from me. And I was the richest little.
So you guys, say it again. You're the richest little 10-year-old what?
I was a little richest 10-year-old on the block.
So I want everybody to take a moment here and really just bask in this. You saw that the schools were having schools were pimping you out to sell those candles and those candies because everybody on the block knew me. I like clockwork, I would hit those streets with those things too.
You remember
they get
that,
you hyped right? At the assembly, they get you hyped up. They were preparing you. I wish we had more classes like that. It was Entrepreneur 101. Because they're like, here comes Monique. She's selling something. But what you did, and when you were sharing this, you and I are like in that way. I did that also. I took that business model, that drive they gave us at the assembly to sell their products at school. And I did a window washing business around my block. So when that money, I was like, why can't I keep working? The neighbors know me. And so I did yard sales and then window washing. And so, but what's interesting is that you scaled your first business at age 10, taking the, you knew enough to know 1 + 1 = 2 in this business. So 1 + 1 can equal 2 here. What do you remember if you do about 43 years ago when you sold your first business for $1,200? What do you remember? Do you remember anything like a voice or a feeling like you knew it could happen? Or what do you remember the psychology was, if you could? I don't know if you can.
No, of course I can. No, I remember the days specifically. So, no, I remember getting the cash. And I remember sitting there thinking, now what am I going to do? I got to figure something out. And so at that time, I was like 10 and a half years old. And we moved again. And to a different park called Somar, not a good area. And at that point, we started doing model homes. So we started cleaning model homes. So I'd go to school in the morning, do chores in the afternoon, take care of my siblings. And then my mom and I would start cleaning model homes at about 8 o'clock at night, finish about 1 in the morning. and it was exhausting. And but the great part of, okay, so here's the thing. I'd work till 1 or 2 in the morning, and it was for developers that were, they have model homes that they were selling. You had to be very spotless and meticulous. So you had to check the mirrors to make sure that not, there were no streaks. You had to check behind the faucets. You had to check the top of the drawer. Like, it was very detailed. And you know, the president of sales and marketing would stop in sometimes to check on us. And his name was Bill Scarborough. And in fact, his son, Sean, just reached out to me today. So that's how long the relationship is. Bill's passed away, but his son was a little bit older, quite a bit spoiled. But Bill would come out and he'd go, man, you missed watermarks. Or, you know, the same as telephone. Their telephone had a lipstick mark on the speaker thing. And
oh,
but he took an interest in me. And he would take me around on projects. And he just really kind of took me under the wing. It, because his son wasn't, his son was a trust fund baby and really didn't apply. So Bill was a great mentor. And then I wanted to be a lawyer. And so I studied real hard. I took AP classes in high school. And well, let me back that up. I moved out at 15. I had enough of the abuse.
Wow.
So I had saved up $900. Well, I saved up more than that, but I spent $900 on my first car. It was VW Bug, a green 1972 VW Bug. And and then I saved up some money in the bank. And finally, I just said, you know what? I've had enough. And I called my German grandmother and I said, Grandma, I need to move out because at that point, I'm 15. The gangs want me to join the gang. And if you don't join the gang, you're in deep trouble, right?
Oh,
you
explain
it, you're either with them or you're against them at that point.
All that homework you've done for people didn't get you off the hook, huh?
No, that's what kept me alive until then. I did do homework. And, so I moved out at 15 and then I went to work for an amusement park called Six Flags Magic Mountain. I started sweeping trash there. And then, and my grandmother, by the way, that was not a free ride. She's German. I had to pay rent, half the utilities, half the business. I mean, nothing was free. I promise that.
No, it's a hand up. It's not a handout. It's a hand
That's
up.
That's right. That's right.
All right.
And, but it was safe. And so.
But it was safe. And you can be focused and eat and be healthy mentally and physically to do the work you needed to do. So we love Grandma.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Grandma was my hero. And then the president of, so I got promoted a bunch. I only swept trash for a few weeks and I got promoted. And then the president, his name was Joe Shalaki, and Joe took an interest. He actually had his son work for me. And I guess Joe and his wife were at a party with the CEO of Singer and his wife, and the wives were talking, and the Singer wife, she said, well, my husband's looking for some new blood. They want to do these national warehouse sales. So if you ever see these full page ads back in the day where it says $99 sewing machine, you know, Singer sewing machine, blah, blah, blah.
In the Penny Saver all the time.
So all of a sudden I get a call from Scott Goodman from Singer sewing machine. And now I didn't know better. I was literally 17 by then, and I show up in shorts, tank top, my flow hose. I had an earring at the time, and we had a really good interview, and so he hired me, and that was at first. I had to learn how to take apart every Singer sewing machine and put it back together within a time limit.
Who knew we had a seamster on our hands with Jay? Who knew?
Yeah.
What do you call a male seamstress? Is it a seamster?
Well, the funny part is I remember one day Scotty looking at me and says, "You're not very mechanically inclined, are you?" And I said, I said, "No, sir, but I can be. Just give me a second. I'll get it."
You'll get it. Yeah.
But I am good with money and inventory and controls. And they literally would give me a suitcase with like $200,000 or $300,000 in it for each of those 4-day sales so I can make change, because we didn't really use debit cards back then. So they entrusted me with $200,000 or $300,000 in cash. And I never used not even a dollar to get my coffee. I buy my own coffee, and everything was accounted for, and that kind of rose up. And they paid me about $80,000 to $90,000 a year during high school, and that was in 1980s.
Wow. So you went from selling your first company at 10 years old for $1,200 to now working for a corporation making $90,000 at 18 years old. I mean,
yeah, I was actually
that's 17. Just insane.
So what happened, now the snag on it, Monique, is that I wanted to be a lawyer. And I got high scores on my SATs. I got accepted to USC. The snag on it is, because of my income, I was not eligible for student aid. And I said, well, how am I going to live? Because I've got to give up that income. It didn't matter. Okay, so I feel for people that struggle with that. Because it's, you know, there's got to be an understanding to it. But nevertheless, I cried one day, and then I said, okay, now what am I going to do? And I thought, well, what do all the wealthy people do? Well, if you have Rockefellers or J. Paul Getty, which is who I'm named after, or the Kennedys, they all made their businesses in different industries, but they made their wealth in real estate. And so
that's an interesting moment. That's an aha moment, everybody. Say that again.
So I had to stop and figure out, what am I going to do? And I thought, what do the wealthiest people, how did they make their money? How can I learn? Well, they all made money from different industries. Getty was in printing, right? Kennedys were bootlegging. I mean, I can't even go through them all right now, but they were all industrialists. Okay. But they made the wealth in buying the land through the industry.
There it is. Okay. It's wealth. And, you know, Jay, let's fast forward for the sake of time. We have a couple more minutes. I want you to, and we're going to have you back. You know, I don't want to keep you. You're already on the other show. I don't want to keep you for a whole hour, but give us 2 minutes of how you scaled from singer. There's a whole 90s South Central OJ piece in there that we're going to cover another time. But let's fast forward to now. You're doing a lot. So having you twice today is like Christmas. But how did you pull this together to get to where you are now? What's the piece when people are scaling? What's the piece that entrepreneurs miss in your view?
I'm not sure that they miss it, but maybe they do. I'd say the piece is to value relationships. Anything that comes too fast also ends fast, right? So if it's sustainable, it takes a while to build it up. It's not an overnight. And you've seen that with, you know, whether you look at Bitcoin or you look at some of the multi-level marketing scams or whatever it is, you can take a number of scams. The faster that you make it, the faster you're going to lose it. It takes time to build it up. And I guess the best piece of advice I can give is be confident. Success is a blend of confidence coupled with humility. So be confident, but be humble and seek out good advice from great people. And great people will see the greatness in you for doing that. And then follow through. Keep your word. And so you've got to have trustworthiness, character, and competence. Character is, I will not lie to you. Competence is another part. I may not lie to you, but that doesn't mean you're going to trust me to perform open heart surgery. So that's why I use trustworthiness, character, and competence.
Set
a goal, something to achieve. When you put together a jigsaw puzzle, what do? You take the cover off the jigsaw puzzle and you lay it right next to the puzzle. And then you put together all the flat sides, right? And then you fill in. And what do you keep doing? You keep looking at the box to see what's it supposed to look like. That's the importance of having clear vision, clarity. Then you must have fun. If you don't have fun, it's miserable. Why would you want to do that? So enjoy your job. I have friends that drive buses for Disney and they love their job. I have friends that work in hotels. They love their job. And I have friends that run multi-billion dollar companies and they hate their job. Right? So, you know, the important part is love your job and have your integrity, your principles, your values. And you will attract law of magnetism. You will certainly attract the attention of others. Take that and take it with humility and with grace and appreciation and follow it through. Don't let those people down. That is my best advice.
You guys, we're so blessed. The business gods have shined upon us today on my 5-year. Jay, thank you for taking twice today your time out of your day. I know that you told me it's like $500 a minute, so I owe you a lot of money, but
hey, Monique, you know the good part?
What? Tell me.
The mentors never charge me, and I pay it forward.
Ah, thank goodness. One bill I don't have to pay this week. Okay.
That's right.
Take it off the list. You know what, Jay? Just a few more minutes and we'll let you go. I'm really connecting with what you're sharing here. And you're right about the relationship part, right? Like I hit a rough patch. I shared with you offline and some other friends, but it's been like a rough 10 months, but really rough early in the last year to like fourth month in this year. And I really had to take a look and take inventory of what was important, but relationships were. And all I could do at the time, because sometimes when you're juggling so many things as a startup and, you know, you're really trying to land the plane for people and keep your word. What I found so important and what people value and what I value, clear, upfront, transparent communication. This is what I intend to do. This is what has happened. This is how I'm remedying it to fix it. And consistency. If you don't hear back from a client, be consistent. Reach out to them again. Be consistent in your follow through. And I really love that you've money mastered the game in relationships. I've seen it with my own eyes. I'm excited to see what you do. Let's plug your companies. Give us both of your brands and where people can find them and get your services.
So for residential mortgage, man, I have one of the best companies in the nation. It is simple. We are not the banks.com. We are not the banks.com. We are better. So I can bank it. I can broker it. I don't care if you're credit challenged, cash flow challenged. I don't care if it's your first investment and you just want a rental property. I can use rental income to qualify you for that property. I don't care if you want to upgrade, downgrade, if it's on downscale and you want a reverse mortgage. No problem. And we're one of the top lenders in the nation. Second one is Calm Loan. So that's for anything commercial. CommLoan. CommLoan.com. I'm Jay Heckendorn. And I promise you don't need to be a millionaire to own your own real estate. That is my job, is to help you get there. I'm only paying it forward. No, we're not loan sharks. No, we're not private money. It's nothing like that. It is just sound business. And because of the relationships that we have in our history, our performance, we have better pricing than what you're going to find with most actual banks or
community
lenders.
Jay, thank you for being here. Thanks, everyone, for supporting the show. Here's to another 5 years. What we start up. See you next time.
All right.
You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.